Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Oh, yeah, we started to burn many things we found. That's the wonderful Pete Seeger with Dar Williams and David Byrne singing the Solartopia song. And we are in a very amazing state here on the way to Solartopia. Shall we say some kind of nuclear detour? Donald Trump is indescribable. We are just hearing today that he wants to abolish the Environmental Protection Agency. That'll be interesting. We'll see what happens with that. I'm sure that many Republicans are going to freak out over that one. But for today, we're going to talk about the demise, the accelerated demise of the nuclear power industry. We had a major announcement this week that Westinghouse, which has been one of the two big players, along with General Electric in manufacturing nuclear power, is now going out of the nuclear power construction business, causing their parent company, Toshiba, a gigantic write-down, many billions of dollars. And to me, it seems like this more or less seals the deal on the future of nuclear power. But we've said that before, and it keeps coming back. It's impossible to drive a snake through the heart of an industry that doesn't have a heart. So we're going to have three really great guests with us today. Kevin Camps, you're with us?
Yes, I am.
Kevin Camps from the Nuclear Beyond Nuclear Organization. Tim Judson, you with us?
Yes, I am, Harvey. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. And Linda Seeley, calling from San Luis Obispo, California. You with us? Oh, maybe Linda got the time wrong. I hope she will join us, but I'm sure it'll be announced when she calls in. You two guys can more than sustain. We have the full hour here to talk about what's happening with nuclear power, and it is really, really complicated. So let's start with the really, really big news. Kevin? What do you want to say about the Westinghouse Toshiba situation and its impact on the future of nuclear power?
Well, it is huge news, as you indicated, Harvey. I mean, Toshiba Westinghouse is one of the biggest players in the nuclear power industry in the entire world, especially in terms of new reactor construction proposed. Here in the U.S., the projects that have actually broken ground involving Toshiba Westinghouse include two new reactors in Georgia, that's called Vogtle Units 3 and 4, and two new units in South Carolina called Summer 2 and 3. And Toshiba Westinghouse has indicated that they will continue to work on those projects. But a lot of the other, gleam in the eye of future reactors, one would hope that this might be their demise. And we still have a lot to worry about with the four reactors I just talked about. There's a lot of ratepayer money unwillingly invested in those construction projects in both states. And then in the Georgia situation, there's actually another $8.3 billion of federal taxpayer loan guarantees at stake. And both Summer and Vogtle projects are over budget and behind schedule by years and by billions of dollars.
So is Westinghouse committed to finishing these four reactors?
That is the press word that Toshiba Westinghouse has to say. But, those construction delays and budget overruns are very problematic, very troubling because of the public money involved. You know, if it were the private companies, Southern Nuclear at Vogtle and the South Carolina utilities, I'd worry less about it. You know, they made the bad decision. But it turns out that in both projects, there is no industry skin in the game. It's completely public risk, and that's the problem there.
Tim Johnson, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, Harvey. I mean, I think you got to see this in the context of, you know, sort of the you know, what was billed about over a decade ago as the nuclear renaissance. And, you know, your listeners, you know, probably heard us talk about this, you know, before over the years. But, you know, we're really at this existential moment in the history of the nuclear industry, you know, where, you know, 12 years ago, with the massive support from the federal government, you know, a $16 billion taxpayer-guaranteed loan program to kickstart the construction of a new generation of nuclear reactors. That's, you know, where the industry submitted 31 applications to build new nukes around the country. And essentially by a couple of years ago, you know, that list had dwindled, you know, down to only about half a dozen, you know, reactors that were still being proposed. The rest of them had been, you know, essentially permanently delayed or abandoned. And only, as Kevin mentioned, four currently being built. You know, Westinghouse was supposed to, you know, this was supposed to be Westinghouse's renaissance. Where most of those reactors that were ordered were these Westinghouse AP1000 nukes. And they had contracts also in China and in India and in other countries to build these things. And here we are a decade later, you know, almost all of those projects have been canceled. Every single one of them that's left is behind budget and over, you know, behind schedule and over budget. And, you know, and essentially Toshiba, which, you know, which ended up, you know, which purchased Westinghouse. Westinghouse is a division of the Toshiba Corporation now, is saying that this business has no future anymore. And they're cashing in their chips. And, you know, and all they're saying is that we're going to finish up these jobs that we already started, but we're not going to start any new ones. And, you know, this is really a sign that the days of the nuclear industry are, you know, are numbered, because this, because Westinghouse was, you know, has been, you know, one of the, you know, one of the major nuclear builders for reactors around the world. And now they're saying that the game is up.
What is this? How does this affect? Linda Seeley, you've joined us. Linda from San Luis Obispo, California. Linda, you're there? Sounds like you might have technical problems. You better call back in, Linda, okay? The question is, one of the questions then, there are no more reactors under construction in the United States beyond these four in Georgia and South Carolina. Those are all being built by Westinghouse, which is now going out of the business. And the question that I have is, what about the plants in China? Was Westinghouse under contract to build any reactors in China? And how does this affect them?
Sure. Well, I mean, there are, I think, four Westinghouse reactors being built in China, but those are being done, you know, those are essentially Westinghouse sold the Chinese nuclear construction firms the design to build them themselves. And so, you know, Westinghouse is, you know, I mean, it's their design. They're still behind budget and, I mean, behind schedule and over budget. But Westinghouse, you know, isn't directly involved in the building of those reactors. And in fact, what you may see happen here is that the Chinese nuclear firms, new nuclear construction firms, may actually, you know, sort of take over the Westinghouse nuclear business, because they've been, you know, they've actually been working on their own reactor designs based on the Westinghouse models. So that's essentially what may happen is that, you know, this, you know, historically American nuclear, you know, nuclear corporation may end up being absorbed by, you know, by Chinese, by a Chinese engineering firm.
Kevin?
Yeah, I would just add to that that there's this remarkable word that came from a trip by the NRC chairman, Greg Yasko, and the FERC chairman, John Wellinghoff, back in 2010. So Obama administration Democrats went to China to tour the AP1000 construction sites in China. And word had it, this has never been officially documented, but on reliable sources, word had it that both officials were shocked by what they saw. I mean, it's not surprising. China has next to no or no environmental or safety regulations, and they were really throwing up these AP1000s in a great big hurry. And it's not nuclear related, but just in recent months, there was a major collapse of scaffolding at a cooling tower. So even if it had been a nuclear plant, which it wasn't, I think it was a fossil plant, it wouldn't have been on the safety side, the nuclear side of the nuclear plant if it had happened there. But something like scores of workers were killed in this collapse of scaffolding. And the shock of Wellinghoff and Yazco was the safety risks being taken at these nuclear construction sites back in 2010. Chances are that never got rectified, you know. And if Tim's prediction plays out that China takes over nuclear construction sites elsewhere in the world, that's something that really needs to be worried about, because at the very least, even if Chinese engineers and nuclear officials showed up in another country in the Western world, let's say, they would not have experience in safety and environmental regulatory obedience, you know. So that's a real problem. And one of the, you know, conclusions coming out of that trip to China in 2010 was, and that was before Fukushima, was the next major nuclear disaster in the world could well take place at one of these new reactors in China.
And the question is, will we hear about it?
Right. Well, that's, I mean, the cover-ups of nuclear incidents and accidents and bad days in the U.S. is sometimes hard to get out to the public. You know, they keep stuff quiet here in the U.S. as much as they can.
Yes, they certainly do. So are there any European projects that Westinghouse was involved in that are going to go down, or what's going to happen on that level?
Well, it's a little undetermined. You know, there are, as you know, as we mentioned, a few other proposed reactors in the country, including, you know, at the Levy County site in Florida, where they actually have been awarded a license to, you know, to build and operate that, you know, those reactors, even though Duke Energy has said that they're essentially indefinitely postponing that, as well as at the Turkey Point reactor sites, also in Florida. You know, which have been delayed, but that the local utility is you know, is still asking for ratepayer money to keep the project on the books. You know, those essentially, you know, it's sort of an open question of whether those utilities would hire someone else to manage the project, you know, like the Chinese firm or some other engineering firm to do it. But it does, you know, raise a big you know, sort of question of the confidence that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission could have about the qualifications of someone to come in and build Westinghouse's reactor for them.
Well, isn't there a law in the books that a foreign company cannot build a reactor in the U.S.? Did I hit a void there?
Yeah, that is true. And, in fact, NIRS led the way on the fight at Calvert Cliffs Unit 3 in Maryland, which was another reactor design. It was a French Areva EPR design, which stands for European Pressurized Reactor. And Michael Marriott at NIRS several years ago, pro se as the attorney, he was not a lawyer, but he was pro se and led that fight for a coalition of environmental groups in Maryland and the area. And that was the winning blow. It gets back to those nuclear loan guarantees. The Obama administration actually offered a $7.5 billion nuclear loan guarantee at taxpayer risk to the partners in that project, which included a French partner, Electricité de France, and also a U.S. partner, Constellation Energy. And the American partner walked away from the deal because the Obama administration wanted an 11% credit subsidy fee on that $7.5 billion, which means skin in the game, which figured out to $880 million of real money. And the American partner walked, leaving the French partner behind. And the law says you can't have a foreign owner. And so that really was the death blow to that project.
Yeah,
wow.
Thanks for mentioning that, Kevin. I mean, it was a historic lawsuit, and it was, you know, it's the only time that a nuclear reactor operating license has actually been defeated by the, you know, by public intervention. But I think the difference in what you're asking, Harvey, is that a reactor, at least at this point, still can't be majority owned by a foreign corporation, but in fact, the U.S. government and the industry has been doing everything they can to get international or foreign corporations to come in and build reactors or do other work at nuclear power plants.
And in fact, after that NIRS after the nearest victory, the NRC has done everything it can to get rid of that prohibition on foreign ownership. So they've actually tried to change the laws and regulations to allow for foreign entities to own atomic reactors in the United States. And I don't know where that's at this point, but it was based directly on that nearest victory. And that's what the NRC does under industry lobbying, is when our side wins or something happens to the detriment of the nuclear industry, they try to change the laws and the regulations to make sure that that never happens again.
Wow. We're talking with Kevin Camps from Beyond Nuclear and Tim Jensen from Nuclear Information Resource Service. Linda Seeley, are you with us? I guess Linda is having technical difficulties. So she's in San Luisville, California. We want to talk to her about the Apple Canyon, but there's plenty to proceed. The whirlwind of Donald Trump has now, Linda? No. Okay. The whirlwind of Donald Trump has now come around, and he's named the new chair of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. What do you guys, without Tim Jensen and Kevin Camps, what do you guys want to say about this one?
Sure. Well, yeah, so what's happened, and this is happening in other commissions federally as well, is that, with the change in the administration, the Trump administration has been sort of reappointing new heads of each of these commissions. So at FERC, at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, this is happening as well. Both of those commissions, FERC, which regulates, energy markets and energy prices, and the NRC, which is supposed to regulate nuclear safety, each one of those commissions has had two seats that have been vacant, for months now because of the partisan fights between Congress and the administration and the Obama administration. Because President Obama had appointed the last chair of the NRC, Trump has appointed one of the standing commissioners on the NRC, Christine Svinicki, to be the chair, until he appoints a new one. This is a terrifying thought from a nuclear safety standpoint, and we can only hope that Svinicki steps down from the commission when her term is up in June. But she has been the most pro-nuclear, industry-supportive commissioner on the NRC for years. And in fact, is the only commissioner that's been on the commission in recent years who's actually refused to meet with public interest groups to talk about safety concerns and what the NRC's regulatory agenda is. So we now have an NRC commissioner who has flatly refused to meet with public interest groups and to hear the public interest side of the story on nuclear safety issues.
Wow. Yeah, one example I can give of that is we had quite a string going at Palisades in Michigan. We met with Chairman Yasko, a Democrat. We met with William Magwood IV, a commissioner who was also supposedly a Democrat, but very, very pro-nuclear. And our final meeting at Palisades was with Chairman McFarland, another Democrat. So we met with three members of the commission, two of them chairmen, in the space of about a year and a half because of the major safety problems at Entergy's Palisades reactor in Michigan. And then Palisades had a very controversial leak of radioactive water directly into Lake Michigan. It was over 80 gallons of radioactive water. It was the culmination of a years-long leak that had been covered up for most of that time. And then the company said, oh, we're going to fix it. The NRC said, oh, they're going to fix it. And they didn't fix it. They had this big, big leak. And so Svinicki came up to Palisades at the request of pro-nuclear Congressman Fred Upton, and not only would Svinicki not meet with us, and Upton also refused to meet with us, they actually did not even acknowledge receipt of our request to meet. But we found out behind the scenes that they had very much gotten the requests, and they didn't even deign to meet with us. So that kind of gives you an indication of Svinicki's bedside manner.
So she's about to become the chairperson.
Yeah, and Tim mentioned, that's pretty typical. I mean, when Obama came in, I think there were only three commissioners standing, and Yasko was the only Democrat, and he was elevated to chairman, and he stayed chairman until they took his head off over the Yucca issue and the Fukushima issue, and he resigned early under a witch hunt on Capitol Hill. But if Svinicki were to, follow that kind of precedent and remain chairman, get re-upped for another 5 years, you've got some idea what she'd be like. But the last rumored kind of the trial balloon that was floated for a Republican replacement for one of these two open seats on the commission was none other than Annie Caputo, who has passed through the revolving door between government and industry more times than I can keep track of. She's been a top Republican pro-nuclear staffer on Capitol Hill in both houses of Congress. She's served as a lobbyist at the Nuclear Energy Institute. Her most recent gig was at Exelon Nuclear. She's no friend of ours, and she's very ambitious. So if somebody like that were to join the commission or even become chairman, you know, it's not a good thing.
Wow. We've also had other developments. We never get much from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission anyway, although we do occasionally get reports of problems, and I'm going to assume that those are going to disappear. I mean, when you have a president who fires an acting attorney general for attempting to enforce the law, I suspect that few, if anybody, at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission are going to come out and report on problems at the nuclear plants that the president doesn't want to hear about. So having said that much, we did have an interesting development at the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Plant. Our friend Diane Turco is actually pictured on the front page of the New York Times today reading an email that she received by mistake from, do you guys know the story?
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
It's a remarkable story.
Do you want to tell us what happened?
Well, you know that auto feature on email where you start to type the name Diane and it fills in the rest for you? Well, this unfortunate NRC staffer, but much to the luck of the public, started to type in Diane Schrenzi, a public relations official at NRC, apparently, or another Diane at NRC staff, and instead filled out Diane Turco, who's a leading watchdog from the public on the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Plant. So she got the email, and essentially the special inspection team leader, one of the leaders of the NRC special inspection team, sent to Pilgrim because of its just terrible performance record, lots of safety problems in recent years, sent this email to Diane Turco that pretty much said, you know, Entergy, its remaining skeleton crew at Pilgrim is completely overwhelmed with the situation and they cannot operate this plant safely. I'm paraphrasing. Otherwise, we would never have known that. I mentioned earlier NRC and industry cover up as much as they can. That was supposed to be an internal NRC email, never meant for public consumption, and very fortunately, Diane Turco got a hold of it.
So there's been an uproar around Pilgrim. Now, Pilgrim is scheduled to shut down when?
In 2019, Harvey. And, you know, and there's, I mean, the backstory to this is also really important. I mean, you know, Pilgrim has had, you know, one of the worst safety records in the nuclear industry in recent years and has been plagued with safety problems, with equipment failures, with, you know, backup system failures, with, you know, with emergency shutdowns for the last 3 years running. And, you know, in fact, it's rated, you know, it's got one of the worst safety ratings by the NRC of any reactor in the country, surpassed only by another plant owned by the same company called Entergy. The NRC has been on site at Pilgrim for 2 years now, essentially doing, you know, follow-up inspections and extra inspections to try to coach Entergy back into compliance with the regulations, at the same time that Entergy has decided to shut this plant down because it's so uneconomical and so unprofitable for them. And so for this, but making all of the assurances that they're looking out for safety and putting safety first, you know, this email from this NRC staffer was really revealing of the dangers of what happens at these reactor sites where these nukes are losing money and the companies are not prioritizing safety because they're hemorrhaging so much cash on operating old uneconomical power plants. That safety has really been last. And what's really sort of ironic about this from the standpoint of, sort of who the NRC is as a regulator is that, you know, NIRS and Citizens Awareness Network and Cape Downwinders and a number of other organizations, you know, petitioned the NRC 3 years ago, saying that, the Pilgrim and other Entergy plants are so uneconomical that Entergy isn't qualified to run them safely. And in fact, everything has transpired at Pilgrim and the other Entergy nukes over the last 3 years has confirmed it. And NRC in this email is basically admitting that that's the case. And yet publicly, putting on this PR show that they're on top of it all and it's all going to be okay. And, one of the things that's really sort of, it reads almost like a satire, is that some of the local officials who've been supporting the power plant, throughout this process, wrote to the NRC, upset that the NRC let this email leak and not upset about the safety problems, but accusing NRC of scaring the local populace and not of doing a good enough job, and didn't accuse them of not doing a good enough job of protecting public safety.
Well, that's always the case. You always blame the messenger and you always attack the whistleblower. It's a shame. So what are the odds now? They're doing a refueling at some point at Pilgrim. Is there a chance that the next and final refueling at Pilgrim will get canceled?
Well, I mean, it's a little bit of a complicated question. I mean, certainly, the groups like Cape Downwinders and Pilgrim Watch and Citizens Awareness Network have been pushing the state government to get that plant shut down sooner because of this very issue. The problem is that, the state, Massachusetts is a state like many others that is deregulated, and the state doesn't have direct oversight of the plant. Only the NRC does at this point. And if the NRC isn't going to do it, there's no one to make them do it. And Entergy has a contractual obligation right now to keep Pilgrim operating until 2018. It's anybody's guess as to how this is going to play out. But certainly what ought to happen and what the groups in Massachusetts have been pushing for is for the governor, to step in and work out a way for Entergy to be able to close that reactor ASAP. And of course, they're supposed to shut down Pilgrim to refuel sometime in the next 3 to 4 months. And that would be, the best possible time to get that reactor offline and put this chapter to bed before, a nuclear meltdown happens on Cape Cod.
And this would be the last refueling. Is that
it
right?
Would be if it continues running until 2019, yeah.
Okay, well, let's hope. I assume that NEARS and Beyond Nuclear are both involved in trying to stop this final refueling and get Pilgrim shut. I have spent many days near the Pilgrim nuclear plant. We used to demonstrate there every Thanksgiving in honor of the Indians at Plymouth Rock, which is just a mile from the Pilgrim nuke. And it is a horrible, horrible nuclear reactor. It needs to shut yesterday, as far as I'm concerned. Others we want to talk about is Linda. Did you ever join us, Linda Seeley? I guess you never made it. We do have deals now on the table to shut both the Diablo Canyon and the Indian Point reactors. Let's talk about Indian Point. Governor Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo, who apparently wants to run for president now, forked over or has committed to forking over $7.6 billion in public money to keep 4 reactors operating in upstate New York, but has turned around and is party to a deal to shut Indian Point earlier. And I'm not convinced that this deal at Indian Point, well, you guys tell me. Tim, you especially have been on the case at Indian Point for a long, long time. Tell us about what's going on there and what you think needs to happen.
Yeah, sure. Well, I think you framed this right, Harvey, that, that Diablo Canyon and Indian Point, just within a year of each other, have struck deals, to close those reactors. And this is really like the bookends of the nuclear industry in the United States. On the one hand, you got Diablo Canyon, which is, one of the most famously opposed nuclear power plants in the world, not just the U.S. And you have Indian Point, which is within 50 miles of nearly 20 million people right next to New York City, and was flown over by the 9/11 terrorists crashing into the World Trade Center. And there's been, a vociferous campaign to close Indian Point for the last, 15 years, 16 years, with the state and local groups opposing the plant. The governor, cut his teeth on this issue when he was attorney general, started the intervention to stop the relicensing of Indian Point. And the the current attorney general and the state agencies have followed suit in in pursuing every avenue that they could to close Indian Point. And essentially what's happened is the governor, in a tremendous act of hypocrisy, decided to subsidize the four other reactors in New York to keep them from shutting down, which is going to cost ratepayers over $7.5 billion over the next 12 years, starting in April, unless that decision is overturned.
Well, is it a done deal? Is that a done deal, or is there a way to stop it?
Oh, no, there's, the subsidies in New York are being challenged, in every possible way. There's a really strong grassroots campaign targeting the governor for doing this. There are multiple lawsuits going on to try to get this thing thrown out. The governor's really under fire from all sides, and in fact, that might have been part of what prompted the governor, to really sort of push for this deal to close Indian Point, so that he doesn't have egg totally over all over his face on this stuff. Essentially, the state and one of the big environmental groups in New York, Hudson Riverkeeper, have been in lawsuits over Indian Point to close it down for several years. And essentially, the governor brokered a deal to get Entergy to the table to negotiate a settlement to stop the lawsuits. And I think to everybody's credit, the agreement is to shut down Indian Point, one reactor at a time, one in 2020 and the other one in 2021. With a lot of safeguards in place to make sure that there's extra inspections and a lot more public transparency as to safety issues at Indian Point, all in the meantime. Essentially this is a decision, to close, one of the most controversial reactors, reactor sites in the country. And, there's some concern regarding, some sort of, possible loopholes in the closure of the plant, just like I think people have been a bit concerned about with Diablo Canyon. But, I think in looking at it on the face of it, we've got to, in 3 and 4 years, we'll see Indian Point close.
Kevin Camps, what do you want to say about Indian Point?
Yeah, another interesting connection between Indian Point and Diablo Canyon is that one unit at Indian Point and one of the units at Diablo Canyon are considered among the worst embrittled reactor pressure vessels in the United States. And a report just came out from Fairwinds, Arnie Gunderson, chief engineer, just yesterday, I believe. It's testimony he gave at Diablo Canyon, where the local groups, including Mothers for Peace, Linda Seeley's group, have urged, with Arnie Gunderson as our expert witness, that Diablo be closed not in 2024-ish, which is the current agreement, but even earlier, by 2019 is what they're pushing for in this, I believe, Public Service Commission proceeding because of the embrittlement issue. And certainly that issue applies up at Indian Point to one of the units. And also we've mentioned Palisades already on this call. It's the worst in the country in terms of embrittlement. And then another one that's just behind Palisades in terms of embrittlement danger is Point Beach Unit 2 on the other side of Lake Michigan from Palisades. And the danger here is like a hot glass under cold water, only a hot glass at 2,000 pounds of pressure per square inch. That's a pressurized water reactor. These reactor pressure vessels could fracture if the cooling system, the emergency core cooling system, ever operates. That's cold water in large volume poured into the reactor pressure vessel to prevent a meltdown, but it could actually precipitate a meltdown because it could fracture that vessel clean through the wall, and then there's no mitigation, there's no contingency. The cooling water, which is liquid because it's at high pressure, it's at 500 plus degrees Fahrenheit, but it's liquid, will instantly turn to steam, escape the reactor pressure vessel, and uncover the core, and you are on your way to full meltdown at that point. And that's the danger they're running at these badly embrittled, geriatric atomic reactors.
Well, what kind of chance do we have of shutting Indian Point earlier than 2020 and 2021?
Well, I think, to some extent, it sort of depends on, what happens with the safety issues at Indian Point. As your listeners may remember, last year, there was this shocking discovery when Entergy did an inspection of the internals of the reactor vessel at Indian Point 2, where they found hundreds of damaged bolts holding together some of the key internal components of the reactor. That if those failed, you could end up in a meltdown situation like what Kevin describes. Part of the agreement that Entergy and the state and Riverkeeper made is that that they're going to have to do basically yearly inspections of the internals of these reactors going forward, and including one at Indian Point 3 this spring. Depending on the findings of those inspections, there could well be significant safety problems that Entergy is just going to say, look, it's not worth it to us to pay the expense of fixing this reactor. We're just going to shut it down. They may also find additional safety problems that we can sort of take to the NRC and force them to have to make expensive repairs that they just won't want to do. That's essentially what's closed a lot of reactors around the country, is that same kind of a situation, like at San Onofre and Crystal River and those kind of plants.
But with Siliki, as I heard name at the head of the NRC, what kind of leverage are we going to get there?
Well, we never have much of a chance of getting the NRC to do the right thing, but sometimes we do.
And when is the next fuel load at Indian Point?
Well, Indian Point 3 is supposed to shut down in March for its next refueling, and then, Indian Point 2 the following March. They stagger them that way.
So I assume that there's going to be a lot of legal activity to prevent the upload of a new load of fuel at Indian Point starting in March. After that one, at Indian Point 3, is there another fuel load, or is that the last one?
There would be another one at Indian Point 3. Yeah, that's part of the deal, is for the reactor to stay operating until 2021.
So that'd be two more fuel loads?
Yeah.
All right, and how about Indian Point 2?
Just the one more in 2018.
Okay, and then that will be the last one there.
Yep.
Well, it's pray. Of course,
like I said, there is a loophole in the in the settlement agreement that's worth being concerned about, which would enable it's basically the agreement says if the state finds that there's some emergency related to electricity supply in the state and keeping the lights on, that they could keep Indian Point running for up to another 4 years. And it's anybody's guess what happens if you get a new governor in there, or somehow the politics change around this stuff. People are really, we're all going to have to be really vigilant and keep up the pressure, to make sure that there's no possible way to squiggle out of this closure date, by 2020 or 2021.
Well, of course, by taking $7.5 billion and underwriting the continued operation of four worthless reactors upstate. Cuomo is crippling the transition in New York State to renewable energy that would fill precisely the gap that the shutting of Indian Point is going to create. Isn't that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the rationale that they use to put through that subsidy is that if nuclear plants shut down, that we're going to be overwhelmed with fossil fuel generation and carbon emissions. And, that's completely the wrong way to approach an energy transition like this. I mean, essentially what New York has done has agreed, to prop up four old, uneconomical, dangerous and dirty reactors to the tune of $7.5 billion, which is going to cost more than four times as much as what the state is going to spend in subsidies to build up renewables to 50% of their electricity supply. Essentially what New York is proving is that, by locking themselves into this agreement, is that renewables are far more cost-effective than trying to prop up old nuclear plants. And there's a danger that in the bizarre world that we're entering into in 2017, that somebody could use that as a justification to override, the decision to close Indian Point. And we've all got to be extraordinarily vigilant about beating back these subsidies in order to make sure that stuff doesn't happen.
Boy, what a nightmare. Now, how long are the four reactors upstate scheduled to continue to operate under the package that Cuomo put forward?
Sure. Well, the reason they ended up with, so the, what the state decided to do is to subsidize these four reactors for 12 years. Essentially, the state has now entered into a contract to pay $7.5 billion in subsidies to the owners of these four reactors until 2029. And the reason they chose that date is that two of those four reactors, their licenses expire in 2029, and they wouldn't be operating past that time anyway. And so these are nukes that are already going to need to be replaced, and yet we're going to spend billions of dollars propping them up when we should be spending the money on how we're going to replace them. Guinea and Nine Mile Point Unit 1 are two of the four oldest reactors operating in the country, among the seven oldest reactors operating in the entire world. And so those reactors are supposed to close in 2029. The Fitzpatrick reactor was supposed to close last month permanently, except for this bailout decision that that New York made. It was part of a deal to convince Entergy to sell Fitzpatrick to Exelon, to keep that reactor going. And Fitzpatrick's licensed to operate until 2034. And the fourth reactor is Nine Mile Point 2, which is licensed to run until 2046.
Oh, my God. Kevin Camps, let's talk about Diablo. The other, now, of course, both Diablo Canyon and Indian Point are on major earthquake faults. Indian Point on the Ramapo and Diablo Canyon on about a dozen faults around the plant, including 45 miles from the San Andreas. Has anything new developed on the struggle to shut Diablo Canyon earlier than the deal?
Well, the only thing I'm really up to speed on would be that report by Fairwinds, that expert testimony by Arne Gunderson that Mothers for Peace brought to bear. And, you know, Mothers for Peace has been one of the main watchdogs on Diablo for many decades now. So they're still at it. They were not a part of that agreement. The agreement was struck by a number of environmental groups, including Friends of the Earth and Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility, as well as NRDC. And that, you know, leaves Mothers for Peace to continue to do their thing, and they are. You know, they're calling attention to that embrittlement risk that could, make uninhabitable central and northern California if the worst happens at Diablo in these last years of operation. I mean, that's the risk is, yeah, it's supposed to close by 2024, 2025, but if the big one hits before then, that may have been a fatal error to not shut it earlier. So that's what Mothers for Peace is trying to do.
Well, that's an understatement. So let's jump in now and talk a little more about the transition to renewables. There have been, reading the papers, there have been major breakthroughs, and really what's most remarkable that I've been reading in the energy-related news is the onset of batteries. It appears now that there are utilities that are starting to build very large-scale battery farms. Are you guys on top of that?
Oh, not
me. I mean, this is an area in which you can kind of see the new carbon-free, nuclear-free energy system, sort of evolving and, right in front of our eyes. Is that, California is really the leader on this right now, but other states are really following suit, with building, thousands of megawatts of energy storage in the next few years to essentially make it possible, to keep the lights on 24/7, with renewable energy. The cost of batteries right now is essentially falling at the same clip that solar started to about 6 years ago, to where now solar is cheaper than coal and nuclear, and soon is probably going to be cheaper than natural gas. Batteries are making the same kind of transition right now, and so I think that we're looking at an energy system in transition, and in the United States and elsewhere, that within a generation is going to be a completely different it's going to be a completely different world if we can stop the dirty energy companies, from essentially putting on the brakes.
They have, though, haven't they? There's been a very aggressive assault on renewable energy. For example, Wyoming, I believe, the legislature there is considering or has passed a law banning the utilities there from using solar energy. Is that correct? Have you seen that?
There's been legislation introduced in Wyoming to essentially do the reverse of a renewable energy standard. That's a renewable energy cap on how much renewable electricity utilities in Wyoming can purchase. And the irony to this, and probably the reason that it's happening, is that actually the largest wind farm probably on the planet, but certainly in the United States, is actually been permitted to be built in Wyoming over the next few years. But essentially what they're trying to do is box it in so that energy is only going to be for export to other states like California. And Wyoming isn't going to get to use it itself.
God, that's insane. Is this going to pass?
It's anybody's guess. You can be sure that people are fighting it. Just like with all the attacks on solar power in other states, this is another front that's opened up. By a state like Wyoming that still has a big interest in mining coal. I mean, Wyoming is the largest coal producing state in the country now, and these legislators are concerned about losing jobs. And it's similar to what's happening with the nuclear subsidies as well. That people are pitting workers and environmentalists against each other. And we got to, and the reality is we need, in addition to promoting clean energy, we've got to have a just transition for workers and communities in this country, because, this kind of infighting between people who are, really looking out for how to build a better world are going to be, we're going to get each other in a divide and conquer situation where we're not going to be able to actually address the climate crisis in time.
What else is happening in solar? I've been following. There's a new book out. I had Paul Geip on last week about wind. Apparently, wind is really moving ahead. And I think what I'm waiting for, and I think the whole world is waiting with bated breath, is to see what China does. China apparently has really jumped in to renewable energy. They announced that they were going to spend $350 billion by 2020. I mean, that's really fast. That's a ton of money on renewables, mostly solar and a lot of wind. But I can never get a clear read of what they're going to do with their nuclear plants. Do we know any way of figuring out what's happening to nuclear power in China?
Well, in terms of nuclear safety, like Kevin pointed out, the lack of transparency, within China extends to nuclear as much as anything else. And so, in terms of nuclear safety, it's anybody's guess as to what's going on there. But the numbers are pretty clear in terms of where China's investing its money in energy, and that's clearly going into renewables. I mean, the nuclear industry is talking about China like it's the world's greatest example of what to do about nuclear power, but in fact, China's investing more money into renewable energy and building renewable energy at a far faster clip than what they're doing with nuclear, and I think the reality is just if you look at what's actually happening. That China's unfortunately building a bunch of new nuclear plants, and they're probably going to continue with that at least for the time being. But nuclear is going to be a bit player in terms of China's energy picture. They're putting the brakes on building coal plants. They've actually had some really horrific environmental problems with emissions from coal plants recently that seem to be kind of pushing them in the right direction. But what they're really investing in and what they're really building in China is renewables right now, and with any luck, that's going to really spill over to the rest of the world. But obviously only if people at the grassroots are fighting for it.
Kevin, you want to comment on that? Kevin Camps.
Well, a couple things I was going to add was I was just out in Nevada in October, and the headlines in the paper in Vegas when I was there were about a new solar thermal concentration plant that's going to be the country's biggest, but probably one of the biggest in the world. So that's, in a sense, that's another form of energy storage because it's molten salt energy storage overnight so that the solar can continue to provide electricity overnight. And it just reminds me that whole concept of something that Arnie Gunderson of Fairwind said one time. He was given a talk in Chicago right when Elon Musk announced his battery packs to go on the sides of houses. And what Arnie said was, if you listen to the nuclear power industry, they would have you believe that they can store radioactive waste for a million years into the future completely safely, which is hard to swallow. but we're supposed to believe that we can't figure out how to store solar and wind electricity overnight, you know. And so this solar thermal concentration that's happening in the southwest of the United States and could happen in other places is happening, you know. And another idea that comes to mind closer to where you're based, Harvey, in Ohio, is we've been pointing out to First Energy Nuclear for years now that they happen to own a compressed air energy storage facility in Norton near their headquarters in Akron that could very well complement a renewable energy surge in Ohio instead of 20 more years at Davis-Bessey, which is going to kick in on Earth Day, ironically. And Davis-Bessey is, you know, a catastrophe waiting to happen. They don't even have a containment. Their shield building, the concrete exterior, you know, last line of defense is severely cracked. Just went through another winter where every freeze-thaw cycle, the cracking expanded a half inch. Every time it freezes and thaws, it expands a half inch circumferentially. So that's a catastrophe waiting to happen. And it could be readily replaced with, you know, solar PV in Ohio, with wind power in Lake Erie, not to mention on land. So, you know, there's real safety consequences for this stuff.
Need a ton of jobs, too, that's for sure. We're almost near the end here. Kevin Camps, tell us where you are and how people can reach you.
Yeah, our website is www.beyondnuclear.org.
And Tim Judson?
Yeah, we're the Nuclear Information and Resource Service, and you can find us at www.nirs.org.
So my perception of the situation here is that we have seen mega leaps in renewables in the last few months, especially when it comes to the commitment of the Chinese to this huge expenditure, and also with battery storage. I mean, I guess that Elon Musk's billion-dollar battery plant in Nevada is kicking in now. I know for our home in L.A., I'm being approached to buy batteries, whereas a year ago, it wasn't even in the picture. And the battery prices are just plummeting, and you can store this stuff overnight. And, you know, I'm sure that the various utility companies are really flipping out here. You know, they've got their guy Trump in Washington, but hopefully the technology is outskirting these guys. Meanwhile, the transition is proceeding in Germany, although we got some really bad news from England. This is bad with Hinkley. They seem to be proceeding with that. Do we have any handle on stopping the Hinkley plant? No.
Well, okay. I mean, there's lots of hitches in this thing. I mean, you know, they haven't even started really doing much of the actual work to build Hinkley. And, you know, the news, you know, earlier this week was that the British government had decided to back out of their pact with the rest of Europe, for the Euratom, you know, sort of nuclear pact. You know, which essentially sort of is going to force, you know, the UK to have to renegotiate every international nuclear agreement that they have to build their own regulatory infrastructure in England in order to, you know, in order to regulate the safety at their plants and to oversee the construction at Hinkley and the other reactors that they've proposed. You know, it's entirely possible that that these agreements and everything that England's got to do, you know, to keep that project, you know, going, you know, could fall apart based on, well, you know, both the companies that they're working with, you know, EDF and Areva from France that are basically, you know, basically bankrupt at this point. And, you know, and their own nuclear reactors in, you know, in England that are all aging and becoming uneconomical. So it's entirely possible that, you know, that Hinkley may end up not ever getting built, but you know, the politics around energy in the UK have gotten really screwy.
Who's actually left? Who would build Hinkley?
Well, I mean, the contract that they've got is for the French nuclear utility Electricité de France to build Hinkley. And, you know, this is another example of how the industry is just kind of, you know, collapsing in on itself. You know, EDF has actually been the operator of all the reactors in the UK for several years now, and you know, so the UK has essentially sort of offshored its nuclear industry already. And, and at the same time, EDF is, like I said, on the verge of going bankruptcy, on the verge of going bankrupt. And they have, over a dozen reactors in France were offline for several months last year because of significant safety problems and questions about, the structural integrity of some of their major components because of manufacturing problems that were discovered.
Unbelievable. All right, you guys. Well, this has been an invited discussion of the demise of the nuclear industry. We'll have you back. Keep up the great fight. Kim Jensen of NEARS, Kevin Camps of Beyond Nuclear. We'll talk to you again, and we'll see you on the barricades.
When the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden,
don't you know we're going to